Chapter 31. A deep, resonant voice was saying something, almost in his ear. The words were vague and distant. An army of scorpions crept over the edge of the bed and began thrusting their poisoned tails in his side. He opened his eyes. The bright fluorescent light above blinded him, so he closed them again. His face felt wet, and he thought he might be swimming and threw out his arms. Then the voice beside him spoke more distinctly.
"Lie easy, partner. I'm just sponging off your face."
Pitt reopened his eyes and focused them on the face of an older, gray-haired man with soft, concerned eyes in a warm, scholarly face. The eyes met his, and he smiled.
"Are you in much pain?"
"It smarts a bit."
"Would you like some water?"
"Yes, please." When the man stood up, the hair on his head nearly touched the ceiling. He produced a cup from a small canvas bag and filled it from the wash basin. Pitt clutched his side and eased very slowly to a sitting position. He felt rotten and realized he was ravenously hungry. When was the last time he'd eaten? His drowsy mind couldn't recall. He accepted the water thankfully and quickly downed it. Then he looked up at his benefactor.
"Old rich and reckless Raymond, I presume."
LeBaron smiled tightly.
"Not a title I'm fond of."
"You're not an easy man to locate."
"My wife has told me how you saved her life. I wish to thank you."
"According to General Velikov, the rescue was only temporary." LeBaron's smile vanished.
"What did he tell you?"
"He said, and I quote, 'You all have to die.'"
"Did he give you a reason?"
"The story he handed me was that we had stumbled into a most sensitive Soviet military installation." A pensive look crossed LeBaron's face. Then he said, "Velikov was lying. Originally, this place was built to gather communications data from microwave transmissions around the U.S., but the rapid development of eavesdropping satellites made it obsolete before it was completed."
"How do you know that?"
"Well, they've allowed me the run of the island, something impossible if the area was highly secret. I've seen no evidence of sophisticated communications equipment or antennas anywhere. I've also become friendly with a number of Cuban visitors who let slip bits and pieces of information. The best I can figure is that this place is like a businessman's retreat, a hideaway where corporate executives go to discuss and plan marketing strategy for the coming year. Only here, high-ranking Soviet and Cuban officials meet to create political and military policy." It was difficult for Pitt to concentrate. His left kidney hurt like hell, and he felt drowsy. He staggered over to the commode. His urine was pink with blood, but not very much, and he didn't feel the damage was serious.
"We had best not continue this conversation," said Pitt. "My cell is probably bugged."
LeBaron shook his head.
"No, I don't think so.
This level of the compound wasn't constructed for maximum security detention because there is no way out. It's like the old French penal colony at Devil's Island, impossible to escape from. The Cuban mainland is over 20 miles away. The water teems with sharks, and the currents sweep out to sea. In the other direction, the nearest landfall is in the Bahamas, 110 miles to the northeast. If you're thinking of escape, my advice is to forget it." Pitt gingerly settled back on his bed.
"Have you seen the others?"
"Yes."
"Their condition?"
"Giordino and Gunn are together in a room 30 feet down the corridor. Because of their injuries, they've been spared a visit to room number 6. Until now, they've been treated quite well."
"Jesse?"
LeBaron's face tensed very slightly. "General Velikov has graciously allowed us a VIP room to ourselves. We are even permitted to dine with the officers."
"I'm glad to hear you've both been spared a trip to room 6.
"Yes, Jesse and I are lucky our treatment is humanly decent." LeBaron's tone seemed unconvincing, his words spoken in a flat monotone. There was no light in his eyes. This wasn't the man who was famous for his audacious and freewheeling adventures and flamboyant fiascos in and out of the business world.
He seemed completely out of character with the prodigious dynamo whose advice was sought by financiers and world leaders. He struck Pitt as a beaten farmer, forced off his land by an unscrupulous banker. "And the status of Buck Caesar and Joe Cavilla?" Pitt asked. LeBaron shrugged sadly. Buck eluded his guards during an exercise period outside the compound and tried to swim for it, using the trunk of a fallen palm tree as a raft. His body, or what was left after the sharks were through with it, drifted onto the beach 3 days later. As for Joe, after several sessions in Room 6, he went into a coma and died. A great pity. There was no reason for him not to cooperate with General Valikoff. "You've never paid a visit to Fosgly?" "No, I've been spared the experience. Why, I can't say. Perhaps General Valikoff thinks I'm too valuable as a bargaining tool." "So I've been elected," said Pitt grimly. "I wish I could help you, but General Valikoff ignored all my pleas to save Joe. He is equally cold in your case." Pitt idly found himself wondering why LeBaron always referred to Valikoff with due respect to the Russian's military rank. "I don't understand the brutal interrogation. What was to be gained by killing Cavilla? What do they hope to get out of me?" "The truth," LeBaron said simply. Pitt gave him a sharp look. "The truth, as I know it is, you and your team searched for the Cyclops and vanished. Your wife and the rest of us went after the shipwreck in hopes we could get a clue as to what happened to you. Tell me where it rings false." LeBaron wiped newly formed sweat from his forehead with his sleeve. "No use in arguing with me, Dirk. I'm not the one who doesn't believe you. The Russian mentality thinks there is a lie behind every truth. You've talked with Jessie. Surely she explained how we happened to find the Cyclops and land on the island." LeBaron visibly winced at Pitt's mention of the Cyclops. He suddenly seemed to recoil from Pitt. He picked up his canvas bag and pounded on the door. It swung open almost immediately, and he was gone. Fosgly was waiting when LeBaron entered Room 6. He sat there, a brooding evil, a human murder machine immune to suffering or death. He smelled of decayed meat. LeBaron stood trembling and silently handed over the canvas bag. Gly rummaged inside and drew out a small recorder and rewound the tape. He listened for a few seconds to satisfy himself that the voices were distinct. "Did he confide in you?" asked Gly. "Yes, he made no attempt to hide anything." "Is he working for the CIA?" "I don't believe so. His landing on the island was merely an accident." Gly came from behind the desk and grabbed the loose skin on the side of LeBaron's waist, squeezing and twisting in the same motion. The publisher's eyes bulged, gasping as the agony pierced his body. He slowly sank to his knees on the concrete. Gly bent down until he stared with frozen malignancy scant inches from LeBaron's eyes. "Do not screw with me, scum," he said menacingly, "or your sweet wife will be the next one who pays with a mutilated body."